Campbell, good morning.
Good morning to you, Annie.
Thank you so much for joining us on the show this morning. Now, just as a first point, approximately when would you say Indigenous Australians first made contact with people from Southeast Asia?
The answer to that we know very clearly. It was in 1606 when the Dutch arrived in Cape York near Weipa, and then over the next couple of decades, there was all sorts of Dutch contacts with Australia. This is what people don't quite understand. You've got to draw a distinction between what we really know without much serious doubt and all sorts of weird imaginings that people have. People imagine everyone must have come to Australia. And, of course, there were always a few people who drifted down from the archipelago. And you could argue that, you know, 60,000 years ago, the long-lost ancestors of modern Aboriginal Australians came from Southeast Asia. But in the way it's usually understood, the Dutch were the first, and they were there because they played an important role in Southeast Asia. And they were there trading. And we know very well what they were doing in 1606, were looking for trading opportunities. Now, the other thing about the Dutch is they didn't find anything. They couldn't believe that there was nothing they could buy and sell in Australia. And they kept coming back and looking, and they couldn't find anything to buy and sell. And we know that that was their intention because even about 100 years after they first started coming in the early 1700s, there was a man in Batavia, modern Jakarta, who said to the Dutch, look, why don't we go and settle Australia? Because you could grow lots of food there and there must be mines and things. A man called Purry. And he got a very sharp slap down from the Dutch Governor General, who said, that's not what we're on about. We're about buying and selling things. We are not about settling.
Mm.
So people knew about Australia from 1606 on all the maps of the world and so forth, but they didn't have any reason to come and settle.
Mm.
Now, the other part of the story, which we also now know lots in fairly definite ways, is that there was one group in the middle of the Indonesian archipelago who did find something to do in Australia. And these were people called Makassar people, who actually came from the city that's still known as Makassar, right in the middle of Indonesia.
Hmm.
And they discovered that they could come to Australia because around the north coast of Australia, there were lots of trepang or sea slugs. And if you knew how to collect these and process them, they could take them back to Makassar and sell them for lots and lots of money to the Chinese, because there was a direct connection between Makassar and southern China.
Mm.
And the Chinese really, really liked eating trepang and still do.
Mm.
And now these people, they, as it were, solved the problem. What can you get in Australia that's really worth a lot of money? And we know that in the 19th century, about 1,000 men or more were coming down each year, collecting the trepang, processing it, and taking it back and selling it.
Hmm.
And they made lots of money. Now, there's a bit of a question about when, and there has long been a question about when did this really start? Now, I know there are lots of stories, and lots of people have said lots of things over the years, and people get it repeated from other sources. We actually now know the answer.
Mm.
Because, and the answer is, these people started to come to the Kimberley coast first in about 1750 or thereabouts. And then one day, somebody discovered that over in Arnhem Land, there was a lot of trepang. And so about 1780, these people began to visit Arnhem Land, especially the northeast coast of Arnhem Land, where the Yolngu people have had such a lot to do with them.
Mm.
But it only began about 1780.
Mm-hmm.
It did not begin any earlier, and I think we can now take that as certain knowledge.
Mm-hmm. Now,
there are lots of problems about that, but I assert that as certain knowledge.
Mm. Now, just on that, there does seem to be quite a bit of dissent between historians about the facts, particularly the dates. Why do you think there is, you know, so much dissent, so much confusion? Oh, yeah.
The reason there's so much dissent is the first people who began investigating this, particularly Ronald and Catherine Berndt, the anthropologists who did wonderful work in Arnhem Land. They actually didn't understand, they had no access to the archival documents that we now know about. And they made guesses, and other people, anthropologists and so forth, made various guesses. They thought it must have been going for a long time, and lots of people wanted to have been going for a long time, and so on.
Mm.
Then the situation was further complicated because I collected some radiocarbon samples back in the 1960s, and people have collected some later, which suggest much, much older dates.
Mm.
Now, these are just plain wrong. We don't quite know why they're wrong, but they're like finding a date for an aeroplane and that would suggest that it was flying around 800 years ago.
Mm.
Now, we know aeroplanes were not flying around 800 years ago.
Mm.
So if something dates an aircraft to 800 years old, we know it's wrong. And that's like this, that we actually know those dates are wrong for some reason, because the archival evidence, which has only really been worked on in the last 10 or 15 years, is now absolutely clear that that business of tripang, sea slug, going into the China market and beginning in the whole of Indonesia in the 18th century and from Arnhem Land in about 1780 is now definite knowledge.
Mm. And just as a final point, Campbell, are there any parts of Indigenous culture which are still visible in the nations they were trading with?
You mean...
So,
It's important to realise not to use the word trade.
Mm, okay.
Because what these people were doing was they came to Australia and they collected the material, the tripang, the sea slugs, processed it and took it home.
Mm.
Now, of course they had lots of contact with Aboriginal people. It was friendly contact. It was unfriendly contact. It was absolutely everything you can think of.
Mm.
I mean, these were, you know, 1,000-plus men coming for 120-odd years. And lots of Aborigines went back to Macassar as tourists and indeed travelled further on ships because there were boats going in every which way direction and they could sign on as seamen and so on. And Aborigines in Australia, and especially Yolngu, have lots of memories and knowledge of what they were doing and there are lots of words in the language. But there was very little influence the other way.
Mm.
There were a few old people in Macassar that I met in the 1960s and other people met a little bit later, who could remember, one man who could remember coming as a young man on the last voyage, the last two voyages, with his father, who was a ship's captain. And he remembered coming to northeast Arnhem Land. He could remember a few words of the language and so on. And the house that Aborigines used to stay in Macassar was most unfortunately only knocked down two or three years ago. It was a great tragedy. But Aborigines didn't really have much impact in a big sort of civilized town like Macassar.
Mm.
One of the things one has to remember is that these people who came, they were very literate, civilized people. They were good Muslims, of course. They had written contracts, very sophisticated contracts about payment and so on. When they met people like Matthew Flinders, who they met in 1804, and there's a wonderful account of all this, the actual technology between the people looking for Trepang and Flinders was about the same. Flinders asked them, "Where are you from?" And they said, "We're coming from Macassar looking for Trepang." And then the captain Flinders was talking to, Pabasso, said, "And where are you from?" So Flinders said, "Oh, we're from Port Jackson, from Sydney." And we know that's what he said because the captain said to his son, "You write that down." The boy wrote that down, some squiggles. And Flinders' companion, Brown, said, "Can I just see what's written there?" And he copied out the squiggles. Now, they're not in Latin alphabet. They're not in an ABC. They're in a special script that Macassar people use. And no one could read it until a very wonderful Dutchman in the 1950s who had studied Macassar language and so forth, he came along and said, "It's easy. It just says Port Jackson."
Wow. It's all very interesting. And Campbell, we really thank you so much for joining us on the show to have a bit of a chat about this subject.
Righto.